that this is a special bonus to be from Barbara. And I would like to say thank you again to all those who made it possible. I have felt such an outflow of love from you all, and I've been so well looked after. And I know that there was a special reason for my coming, and I just want to say to all of you, thank you again for all the love and care you've shown me on this trip.
And so, Mike, I was wondering if we might begin by asking if each of you could share with us some particularly happy time, a special time with Baba that comes back, just some moment of joy with him.
Would you like a particularly unhappy time?
Personally, yes, of course. Tell us.
All right. It'll take me 10 minutes. Right, turn the lights down. It's as bad as that. One of my jobs in India was to look after the animals. They didn't think I was capable of looking after the human beings. And I was perfectly happy because I had a lot of beautiful animals to look after. And one day, how did that happen in the beginning? I had a dog, and he was very, very peculiar. He began to crawl under seats and behave badly. I didn't know anything about mad dogs. I'd lived in England, where we don't have many. But this is one of the signs. If your dogs begin to crawl under seats and disappear and do strange things, just watch them. Well, I didn't watch this animal. And it turned out that he was mad. And I didn't know it. And one morning, I went to the gate of the house we were living in, and there was this dog lying on the ground. And he jumped up in the air at the sight of me and went, "Wow!" Put his paws up, and then turned round and round and round with his eyes crossed. "Whoa!" I knew he was mad then. I mean, before that I hadn't met. And I hadn't time to get out of the way, and he came and bit me twice, once on the hand, once on the wrist. And I was terrified. Mad dogs. And I rushed up the garden, and there was Baba. Baba looking happy and gay and happy. And I said, "Baba, the dog has bitten me, the dog has bitten me." And Baba said, "Oh, yes, really?" Took no notice of it, gave me no treatment. And that night, I'd been all day alone in misery. He wouldn't say a word. The doctor wouldn't say a word. The doctor wouldn't come. And there I was stuck. And at night, Baba sat on my windowsill with, I think it was one of the men, and they read a book all about mad dogs and hydrophobia and so on. Well, I tell you, I was so tired, you won't believe it, I fell asleep as nothing had happened. But that was so much, it was so strong, the fact that this I'd been bitten by a mad dog and nobody was taking any notice of me. Well, the next morning I went to breakfast and Baba said, "How are you feeling this morning?" Sort of spelt it on the board, and I said, "I feel awful." And he said, "Really, it's a pity." And then all day long he took no notice of me about the mad dog. I sat all day long, you know, I hadn't got any money, but I was going to make a will. And the next morning, however, Baba changed his mind and sent me to the doctor in the nearest town. The doctor was furious. He thought I was mad. several of the Baba's main disciples went with me, and they told him about Baba, and he was furious, even more furious then. And he undid my dress and looked at my stomach, and there I had red lines, red, one green, one circle, green, one other. And he, I couldn't do anything then. And he said, well, if, instead of getting rid of this thing safely in 10 days, it'll take you 40 days. And he started to give me treatments. And he used to come every morning to the house. And he was very good, and he gave me the treatments. And when anyone had anything to do in the ashram, they'd come around and see me have my injection in the stomach. it was a sort of a fate. Well, it went on for a long time. And then I really got my reward. Baba went away with the girls. And he said I was too ill to leave behind, and I went with Baba and the girls. I can't tell you, the morning I got on the bus, on the car, to go with him, I was so alarmed that the others were going to be nasty to me, which they were. Rana was hanging about with a stick. I don't think she was going to hit me, but she was hanging about. I crept through the bushes at the back and crawled onto the car. I didn't go in the car with Baba and the girls. I went in the car with the two or three others of the main disciples. And we went off, and although I had been had an awful, dreadful time for a few months, I then had my reward. I went off with Baba and the girls and left the wretched rest of the ashram. We loved each other, but we didn't love each other all that. Do we still love each other, Kitty?
Actions speak better than words.
I see. Well, that's a little story for you.
Did the doctor meet Baba?
Yes, the doctor followed Baba afterwards. Oh. He became one of Baba's close followers, which was nice. He deserved it because really he used to go out of his way to give me this. He couldn't understand why I hadn't been to the 2 days. He just couldn't understand, but he did after he'd followed Baba. He followed the wee babe Baba absolutely, whatever happened.
What was the sequel?
What was the sequel? Well, here I am. And I am more or less sane, Delia. I don't know how far people consider it, but it doesn't matter, does it? You don't mind? That's right.
Did you come back to England soon after that?
No. Not very soon after. I came back to England After the war. You know, there was that awful journey.
I met you at the station.
Hmm?
I met you at the station.
Oh, well, that's good of you. Thank you. You see how kind we were to each other? She met me at the station. I'd been away about 10 years, I think. Your turn.
But what is it you are asking me? Because Margaret told the opposite story to what you asked.
Did you also have a wonderful experience?
I can't equal that. Well, I think... Perhaps. Are you asking me? Well, anyway, I'll tell this story. Baba said he wanted a holiday, and we were to go to Lugano. And of course, Kitty was there, Margaret, myself, my sister Minta, and we were nicknamed after a very tall, rather beautiful lady, Kim. We got the name Kim Cole because the little boy Arlie used to say, "Baba, Kim and Co are here." Well, Kim rather imagined herself as a sort of Mary Magdalene. My sister Minta also rather imagined that. And I was put to look after Kim and Minta, and I was caught between this terrific sort of tension and jealousy of both of them wanting Baba's attention. That one day Kim disappeared, and Baba sent us all looking for her. Eventually, we found her bowed before the altar and saying she'd given herself back to Jesus. Anyway, we took her back to Baba, and he patted her and embraced her. And then, when he did that, then my sister Minta threw a tantrum. And in the end, I was so confused, I didn't know where I was. And I rather admired Margaret and Kitty's aloofness, but I became very jealous of both of them. But just at the end, Baba called me, and he said that he had done this for a special reason, and that by not complaining at the time, I had helped him in the work that he wanted to do with both Kim and Minta. I don't know that. It's not like Margaret's story. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that.
I don't quite know what kind of a holiday Baba had in the end, because there was a terrific series of these sort of episodes. And whenever we went up in a funicular and Baba said he would like some radishes or something like that, Kitty immediately sprang out of the funicular, rushed in the people's garden and demanded radishes. And she really got it. She got some radishes. Then another time, Baba wanted potato chips. So Kitty sent post haste a cable to London, "Please send potato chips." And as far as I can remember, she went to the best hotel in Lugano and asked for potato chips, which she got. In fact, when we returned, Quentin, who was one of Margaret's friends and was living with them, we all looked particularly exhausted. That was one of Barbara's ways of working, actually. Margaret, you know he was your friend. Barbara put him in with you.
Do you know who?
Yes.
Well, of course he was my friend.
Anyway, he kept Barbara amused by telling him funny stories.
Oh, Barbara loved it. Barbara took him around the world with him.
Yes, I know.
And it was Quentin Todd, who was an actor. And he was an American actor. And he was very good on the stage. And he took Barbara and introduced him to Mary Pickford and all those old stars. And that was how Baba came to have that big connection in Hollywood. I think Baba went to see Mary Pickford, and Mary Pickford said, "Will you sit by me and meditate with me?" She hadn't the wildest idea who Baba was, in a way. And Baba said yes, and he sat and meditated with her. There was Mary Pickford. He had a big, big, big connection with those Hollywood, old Hollywood people. And that was through Quentin.
The one thing that Quentin couldn't do was to give up Earl Grey tea. Whenever Baba wanted him, he was always disappearing to make tea.
Oh, well, that's how he came to leave Baba. He had an awful time. Quentin could not live very well without a cup of tea in the middle of the afternoon. And he used to make it. He had a little pot and he had a little jar and make it. Whatever was going on. And I remember one day Baba was telling a story. Quentin was making his tea and we were all listening. And somebody came in with some birds to put in a cage for Baba. Baba had a big cage and these birds were going to be put in the cage for Baba. And this creature rushed in with the birds, and Baba signaled to kill Quentin to put the birds in the cage. And Quentin said an absolutely forbidden thing. Oh, wait a minute, Baba, I must finish making my tea. Baba had the birds put in the cage by someone else, and from that time, Quentin left Baba. I mean, it wasn't that time, but from that time, his whole status was lowered. But that was the birds that did it with Quentin. Strange things happened, just very simple things like that. But that was poor Quentin. But you may be glad to know that Quentin, although he left Baba before the war, he came back to Baba during the war. And when I went back to England after being in India those years, I met Quentin and he said, you know, I love Baba. I made a mistake behaving like this and I love Baba. And he died 2 weeks after that. So he came back to Baba anyway. You'll be pleased to know he was a charming person. If you wanted someone with charm, you had Quentin.
Nearly all of those who left Baba came back. Nearly all of those who left Baba, I think at the end, came back.
Those that left Baba, they often came
back. Jean Adriel did, I know.
I don't know anything about Jean Adriel. Jean Adriel went off and followed someone who had 500 pupils. I don't know. I never knew what she did.
Kitty, what is your recollection?
I've been thinking all day and I can't think of any particular thing to say. I really have. I don't know whether I got used up yesterday. We had a very busy day yesterday. But all of today I've been trying to think of some story that I know or recollections. So I said, well, I'll have to call on Margaret to give us a second story, and perhaps during that time something might come into my mind which isn't there now. So Margaret, I want you to tell another story because I've got nothing in my mind.
Now, what story do you want to tell?
What's that? What?
What,
Could you tell us the snake story that somebody might have
heard?
You want
to hear the snake story again because some didn't hear it during dinner.
Well, listen, I don't know whether you call it actually a funny story.
But
it wouldn't
be funny, darling. I do not funny.
Well, I've always had a horror of snakes, and particularly when I was in India, they were rather plentiful, and they really frightened me quite a lot. And one afternoon, we were on tour with Baba, and it was my duty at that particular day to make the tea for the whole group, and I was down in the kitchen making the tea, and suddenly while I was going to pour out some of the hot water and get the tray ready, there was a terrible bang. Now let me see if I can tell that. Right, yes, there was a terrible noise. Now wait a minute, sorry. Well, now, perhaps I've got it not quite right. But anyway, on this particular afternoon, I was making the tea and I looked out of the window and I saw this snake just outside the window. Now we always kept a stick close by so that we could hit the snake if it was of a dangerous kind. And so immediately I was very brave and I was making the tea and there was this snake just outside the pathway. So I looked around for the cane and I got the cane and I went outside and for a long distance I took the snake, the stick and began hitting at the snake. But it didn't move and I went on hitting. And then I hit the head and then I saw the head was coming apart from the body. And I was looking around, and then suddenly I saw Baba just behind me and the girls, and they had placed this snake just where it was, outside the window, where they knew I would look to making the tea. And they thought they'd give me a frightful start. And of course, I was never quite so frightened of snakes again.
Was it a real snake?
Which one?
The one you hit with the stick.
Oh, no, it wasn't a real one. No, no. They had planned this little joke on me, knowing that during the period I was making the tea, I would look outside the window. And so they had placed this snake in this particular position. And then I saw nothing was happening to the snake. It didn't move away. And then I happened to look behind me, and there they were all chuckling behind my back. Well, I suppose in that way Baba took the fear away, because I've never been afraid of snakes since then. But I remember
Baba
that story.
Baba did love a little joke sometimes, didn't he?
Well, yes, now you tell a nice joke of Baba's. That's what I wanted. Margaret's full of Baba's jokes.
And he wasn't the snake made of dough or pastry?
Oh, yes, it was. And it was very much designed on the top, you see. Oh, yes, it was beautifully made. Marnie had done it. Right. Oh, yes, right. Right. Well, they made it, had a good laugh.
It's all right. I would like to just tell a little story about a snake with Kitty. How at the house where you live now, Kitty, there was a big bird's nest over the lamp near the door, the porch light.
Yes, oh, yes.
And,
I know.
Someone, a girl named Carrie, who was with you that day, I happened to be on the porch standing there just outside in the dirt, you decided that it was time to take that nest down.
Yeah.
And she went up and lifted the nest from the porch light and handed it down to you. And it was over her head as she picked it up, and she couldn't see into the bird's nest. And she handed it down to Kitty, and Kitty looked into the nest, and there was a big moccasin snake in
yes.
there. And you were very calm and didn't even say a thing about it. Just said, oh, there's a snake in here.
Yes, I remember that occasion. And the lamp is still there, outside the front door.
First meeting, each one of you with Baba. First time you saw him.
All right, I'll begin with that. The thinking. The first time I met Baba, my brother had been in India, Herbert, the one who brought me to Baba, really, and he got a friend who was coming to London to stay, and I went, and his name was named Meredith Starr. And Meredith Starr knew of this great master from India and had told us about him. And my brother was asked if his father would put him up for one night in London before he went down to the retreat in East Chalicombe. So I went to father and asked if he could stay with us. And father said, yes, certainly that was all right for one night, and then he could go on the next day on to East Chalicombe. So that he did come and stay that first night with us, and I went to the station to meet him. And it was a very busy Saturday afternoon, because there was the Rajputani had just come in from India, and it was packed with people, because on that same boat train was Gandhi. So all those people on the platform, which I thought, well, it was very funny, because I thought Baba knew nobody when he came to England for the first time. And out of the train came down Gandhi and Indira. And then this was the same boat that Baba was coming on the Rajputani. So So I said to the porter, I said, well, is there another part of the train coming in another platform? Because there was a very busy Charing Cross or Victoria Station terminus. Oh, yes, he said, on the other platform, if you're very quick and you run up the steps and down some other steps, you'll get there while just as the train's coming in. And it was, and I did what he said, and just as I arrived on the station, I saw my brother get out of the train, and he had been to Marseille to meet this Mr. To meet Meher Baba there, and when he came onto the platform, he came onto Victoria Station with Baba, and I met him there on the platform, and I just shook hands with him. And he was going to come to stay with us at our house in London, and so my brother was also with him there on the platform, and I remember Baba in a sort of long coat and a western suit and I think he had something on his head, and his eyes I always remember were very, very piercing. And that night he came to stay with us, and I remember in the evening that we all sat together and we had some music, and that same evening after Baba had gone to bed and Margaret and I were in the same house, in my parents' house, and I remember going up to Margaret in the middle of the night and giving her a good shake.
And said, what did you say?
I said, oh, but how wonderful he is. I suppose I was half asleep and half awake, because I don't remember it myself.
The house was full of people all over the floor, everywhere else in your house that night.
Yes. And so I just went up to Margaret and to say, well, how wonderful he is.
You cried, Harold?
Right. But to go back to the station, you asked where I was when I first met Baba. It was at the railway station, and I just shook hands and said, how do you do? And I didn't expect ever to see him again. And then my brother took him off in the taxi to the house where we lived, and I remained behind to come along with all the bags and bags of luggage, because they were coming for a whole year. There were about four of them altogether. And so that was the first time that I met Baba, and I had no idea that my whole life was going to change from that day on. So that was my first time with Baba.
Hey, David, what about the sadness? You could talk about sewing the sadness, remember?
Oh, yes. Well, the first evening that Baba was with us, and we were all together in that room in 32 Russell Road, I think Margaret was there too, and what Baba did, he asked us each to come alone for a few moments while he just sort of, we talked with him, and I noticed that he had a little tear in his sadra. He was dressed in his white sadra, and he knew that, I suppose I didn't mean to let him know, of course I was seeing him for the first few moments, that I was thinking of such a thing, but I did see there was a tear in his white sadra. Well, he got the thought very quickly, because he immediately got Meredith Starr, who was interpreting for him, to say that this was only the first, I was to go and get a piece of cotton and needle and to come and mend the tear. And then afterwards he said, and this is the beginning of further service you will have to do for me. And I remember that very clearly. And that was my first contact with Baba.
Delia, how do you remember Baba the first time you saw him?
You want me to describe it again?
Baba's appearance. What was Baba's appearance?
Well, I had been down to East Charlecote, but I couldn't stay down there until Baba came. So I came back to London, and an appointment was made for me to meet Baba at Kitty Davies' home. But the night before, Margaret rang me up and said, Delia, Baba wants to go to the theatre. So I have booked a box at the Coliseum for a musical comedy called White Horse Inn. and we want you to come as a surprise. We told him that we have a surprise for him. But I was warned to stand by the box office and not to go up to Barbara until I was taken in by Meredith Starr. So by the time I got into the box, there was a vacant seat by Barbara, and he'd taken his hat off. The hat, that horrible hat, they'd put him down to there, and a coat to his foot, which he'd taken off. And he looked so radiantly beautiful. And I sat next to him. Then the curtain went up and the play started. And it was a lovely musical comedy, but I wasn't conscious of really anything that happened. I was only feeling Barbara all the time. I felt...
You cried all the evening.
What?
You didn't stop crying all the evening.
I cried?
Yes, you cried. She sat in that
box
and cried.
Well, that's it. I felt completely stunned with Bob, and I heard him laughing. And I thought, the fat man. And Barbara loved fat men. Anyway, at the end, I was so overcome, I said, Barbara, I must see you again. And he nodded. And after that, I went up every day to see him at Kitty's place. No, does that satisfy?
That's better, Margaret, yeah.
Shall I tell the story of when Barbara reprimanded both of us?
Oh, no.
Delia, tell the story of when Barbara reprimanded both of us.
It was at Nasik, and Barbara said, on your birthday, you could have ice cream. And it just happened that Barbara was there on my birthday, February the 10th. And they were preparing for his birthday, and the men were all very busy building this big tent to hold all these thousands of people on the platform.
We never had ice cream, that's what I'm interrupting.
Come on, Margaret, I ate the ice cream with Barbara looking on. Don't interrupt me. Just wait till the end. You can interrupt me at the end, not now.
All right.
Wait. So a message came. Delia would, Barbara would like to see Delia and Margaret. And I had put on my best dress. I can't remember what Margaret had on. Anyway, we tripped up lightly. And when we got to the door, I saw Ardy Jr. standing in the doorway looking very gloomy. We went in, and Barbara was sitting looking very solemn like that on the bed, and he beckoned to us to sit on each side. And first he looked at Margaret, and he said, I have heard, Margaret, from the men that you said that I was doing all this celebration to impress the Western group. He said, how could you think such a thing? And then he turned to me and he said, Delia, you agreed with Margaret. And he said, how could you think such a thing? I don't need to impress anybody. By that time, Margaret's eyes were streaming with tears and I was sobbing. Anyway, in the end, after he saw that we were sorry for our guilt, and he took us by the hand and said, come in now, and he took us, and the others were sitting on the table, and they thought, poor things, they've had a wigging from Barbara. Anyway, he sat down and he said, now, eat your ice cream. Now, whatever Margaret says, I remember it.
I'll tell another story about ice cream and then you won't be hurt.
Yes, okay.
And then you can contradict me, but you went there, so it was lucky.
We were in, we were touring with Barbara, and Norina got one of her fits. We weren't doing any work. We weren't converting the world to Barbara. And Norina had these fits at times, and she took Donkin or someone and went to the next town with Baba's permission to speak in the marketplace about Baba. Well, Baba decided that when she'd gone, we'd have some ice cream, which we hadn't seen. We didn't know what it was, almost. And we had some ice cream served up. And then, just as we were about to spoon it up, Baba said to me, "You thank God for this." So I said, I shut my eyes, and I said, "Dear unknown God, thank you very much for the ice cream." Baba clapped his hands. "What do you mean, unknown God?" I said, "I thought you meant that God, the God, the God, the God beyond." He said, "No, you thank me for it." So I started again. "Dear God, the ice cream is delicious." We hadn't seen any for months. You lucky people living on ice cream. What?
I don't know, I read it something in the Globe that there was a special meaning to ice cream.
Meaning?
That, yes. Well, when Baba told you to eat ice cream.
I have no idea.
No, but there was something. I don't know.
I don't know. We only had this about once or twice while I was there, so I don't think that could have been very important. Otherwise, that counts for slowness of our profession.
Entertaining Baba during those times, what sorts of things did you do for him?
Well, my job was to read out loud in the evening detective stories. And every evening when we had somewhere nowhere to go, I read detective stories. We went over. We started with who's the famous one? The first one. Sherlock Holmes. And we went on from there, and we went right up to the modern ones. And every night, and then Baba would wait until there was a crisis. And you were going to turn the page over, and you were going to know who done it. And everyone was excited, and I'd turn the page, and he'd say, "It's time to go to bed." Then he'd say, "You put that book away, Margaret. You're not to look at it, and nobody's to know."
But you sent him for a month, didn't you, when you came back? When you came back to the West, you will send him for a month of the book.
Yes, I sent him some every
week.
Yes,
because I had to read them in 48.
Yes. Oh, yes, I had to send books.
Delia, did you entertain Bob?
In India, we had all these plays
well,
to do.
In Europe, yes, in the early days, right. Was there entertainment in that
in
way?
In the early days, what did we do in the theatres? What was that thing we did?
We'd have to get up plays, and we had Laurel and Hardy, I remember, and I was Laurel in that. And
who was Hardy?
Probably Rana. We did several plays for Baba's entertainment. Whenever Baba went away in seclusion or went off after must, then he would leave word with Marley that she was to write a play and we were all to act in it. And I was so frightened at it, I used to lock myself up in the cupboard. And I can remember quite well there was going to be a play on, and I just locked myself, I hadn't locked myself in, but Mama said, "Well, they're not all here yet. Where is Kitty?" Nobody knew where I was, and I was inside the cupboard. No, but Baba did a lot with the acting of plays. He said that you can lose your ego there and you forget yourself.
Or gain it.
Pardon?
I said, or gain it, or bring it up to the surface. So
yes, right.
It.
that's whichever way you look at it. And so we did a lot of acting.
Poor old Eagle. No, God.
Why were we called the Frivolous Three?
Why were you called the Frivolous Three? What did you do to deserve that?
Oh, I think we played jokes on the rest of the people in the ashram. Particularly on Norina and Nardine.
Well, you see, you must remember that Norina was a very different type of person from us. She wanted to be a leader. Well, if there anything in the world Norina wanted to be was a leader, and she thought her social position and everything else would cause us to follow her to Barbara. But I was there before she was. But she still went on with this business of trying to pretend she was a leader. And we all behaved very badly.
Going back to 1931, when you first met Baba, what were the circumstances for your meeting?
Meeting him?
Yeah.
What were the circumstances? My circumstances were very difficult. My life was in a mess. I was nearly 40. Everybody at that time died off that I loved. Diaghilev, the great director of music. Diaghilev. Who else was there that died? Anna Pavlova, the great dancer. And a man I was in love with, my father, my mother, and they all died. And I thought, well, poof, there isn't anything spiritual in the world. And I threw it all over. I definitely said I will have nothing to do with spiritual things, that they can't exist. Then I went to judge a competition down on the South Coast, and I met a woman who was not quite right in the head, I must say. She wore veils, I mean about 20 veils and all sorts of other things, and she said, came up to me and she said, "Hello, Margaret, where are you going?" So I said, "I was going to the South Coast to judge a competition." And she said, "Oh, dear, that's where I had my honeymoon, and I've never been able to afford to go back since." So I said, "Look here, Dorothea, you can come with me. They're paying me heavily to go down and judge this competition, and I'll pay your fare. You go down and see your honeymoon spots, and then we'll come back together." And on the way down, I said, "Dorothea, do you know somewhere I could go for a holiday? I want to get away from all my friends." I felt like that. I was in that state. I was really very unhappy. And she said, "Oh, yes, dear. I know a man. He's just opened a place down in Devonshire, and his name is Meredith Starr." And I said, "All right, give me the address." And I booked to go to Meredith Starr, and I was going down there for a holiday, away from everybody, away from religion particularly. And as the train was going from the station, the day I went down there, this woman, with all her veils and all her beads and everything, ran along the station. And everybody peered out of the train. They couldn't believe this apparition. And she reached the carriage where I was in just as the train started, or I should have got out. And she said, "I forgot to tell you, Dar, you have to meditate for 4 hours a day." I'd given up everything spiritual. So I thought, well, I may as well sit here. They can't make me meditate. I can just sit. Well, I went down, and I was met by Margaret Starr, And she walked with me over the hills to the little farmhouse that they had there. And as the door of the farmhouse opened, it opened into the living room, not into the hall. There was no hallway. And on the wall was Baba's photo. And I said, "Who's that?" And I didn't take any notice of Meredith. I didn't shake hands with my host. I didn't do anything. I just said, "Who's that?" And then I was stuck. I must say, from that moment, I knew something had happened.
You did enjoy the meditation of it.
I did enjoy the meditation.
Yes, you did. When I was there, you used to be Meredith's star meditator. Hannah said one evening, and put a bronze thing on the floor, and he said, "More or less told me that I should become like Margaret in meditation."
I didn't know that. Yeah. That was poor old Meredith. Poor Meredith.
Said, "I enjoyed it."
Oh, yes, I did too.
So then,
do you remember the last week? I stayed on an extra week, and you were sleeping in the garden on a chair, not a chair, it was a camp bed, and they put another camp bed for me, so we slept in a shed for the last week.
I'd forgotten that.
So then later, when you met Baba in London, what was it like to see him that first time?
Wonderful. What can I say? Knocked me flat. I've been flat ever since.
And I know what I said, Margaret, because you were staying with us, with me when we first met Baba.